Yeah, let's just go through them. Who here is with a press or a publisher? And how many of you guys are writers? Okay, cool. So we're going to speak to both how writers can work with influencers and bloggers and how presses can work with them and how that's different and all that stuff. So we're going to sort of go over a couple of things first. Let's just define what an influencer is and who you would put in that category and sort of what qualifications they might have and the difference between like a Reese Witherspoon and someone on Instagram and how that works.
Yeah, so I think in the world of literary publishing, we can have a pretty expansive definition of what an influencer is. It certainly includes people like Reese Witherspoon, who's doing her book club, and Oprah, but you know, people are making their own communities on social media and online, and those really tight-knit communities can be really helpful in getting a book out there. So I think for us, it's not as much like Kim Kardashian, although it'd be great if she, you know, held up your book. Or who was it? Like Carla, the Hadids.
Oh, yeah.
The Hadids recently were
like
carrying around some
accessory.
Camus. Did everyone see that?
Were they real books? Because they now make those purses
yeah,
that look like books. So I was like, I wasn't really sure.
They're real. Allegedly.
So, yeah, I mean, I think that influencers is an interesting term, right? Like, I think that the book industry has changed a lot over the past decade or so, and I have a lot of young authors who come to me, and they're like, you know, does it matter to a publisher whether or not I have a social media presence? And, you know, I really wish I could say no, but I actually do think that that's one of the considerations that publishers take into account when they're considering doing debut books in particular, or, you know, if their list is really long and they have one spot, like I feel like it would play a part. I think that, you know, like Karen was saying, like, there's different levels of literary influencers, but I think for small press authors, I really would like people to start seeing it as, like, people who are good literary citizens. You know what I mean? Like, people who feel like they have the wherewithal to support and spotlight other authors, and that way kind of, like, building mutually beneficial relationships between author and author, between like author and indie bookstore, you know, between like distributor and publisher, that kind of thing. I think that if we start thinking about it as like a mutually supportive endeavor, it'll be really helpful. I make this joke a lot that if poets didn't support other poets through reviews and book sales, then there would be no poets. But that's kind of true. And I don't think there's anything wrong with that, you know? To have a tight-knit community and to support each other like that, I think is actually a really special thing.
So wait, let me just clarify something. When we talk about a good literary citizen, do we define that by who they're connected to or follower counts? Where do you sort of draw that line?
Oh, go ahead. I think it depends. So definitely one definition of influencer is follower count and reach, right? You know, there are accounts on Instagram that post books with, you know, hundreds of thousands of followers. But I think for small presses, independent presses particularly, some of our most important influencers are actually booksellers at independent bookstores. And I don't mean just the buyers. I mean the people on the floor who are hand-selling books. And because those are often young people, they're often online, and they are talking amongst themselves about what they like, and they're the ones that get to choose face-out displays. And so, yeah, or at least for us, some of our most important influencers are the indie booksellers, for sure.
Yeah, they're the original influencer for us.
Yeah, I would also say librarians. There are a lot of librarians on like LinkedIn and Instagram, or actually like going and talking to a librarian at your local library is really helpful. Just speaking to them about the criteria that they're looking for, or really just kind of like putting an order in for your book, kind of increases demand in the book data, and that's also really important. Even though that's kind of like sort of like tangent to the social media trajectory, I guess like I would also define a good literary citizen as, I think that writers can really help other writers. Like, I think that, you know, when I work with small presses or small press authors who really want to get reviews, and they don't have enough money to print a lot of ARCs, or a really small marketing budget, what I always recommend that they do is to place reviews. And where I ask them to start from is, like, who have you worked with in the past 10 years who might have, like, written a review of your book, or who you've written a review of their book, and they might want to pay back the favor. And I think that that's also kind of, like, a good way to go. You know, it's like, there are a lot of people who have a lot of followers and a lot of likes and stuff, but I also think that there are the people whose vote or consideration of your book means a lot because they're discerning. That's also something to take into account. I always think about the poet Brandon Shimoda, who's like a really wide reader and spotlights very often just like quotes from new books he's reading. And he's kind of like very clear that he really only posts what he likes. And because of that, I think that people really respect his opinion.
Cool. So let's go into what exactly does an influencer do for a publisher, and what is their role in the publicity campaign? Posting pictures on Instagram.
I mean, for us, for example, this weekend in our New York office, we are having a meetup of bookstagrammers in our office, and we are partnering with an organization called the Book Carousel, which is just a club of bookstagrammers who used to just get together and swap books amongst themselves. And for the first time, they'll be coming into a publisher's office. They usually meet outside. It's cold still, so they're coming to our office. And, you know, I learned a trick from Rachel Fertilizer, who's at Knopf, who was supposed to be here in my seat, but she's had a baby. And Rachel, when she hosts bookstagrammers, provides, like, a little stage table for really nice photos. And it doesn't cost very much to go buy some flowers and a decent, you know, like, tablecloth. I think we spent $15 setting up for the thing, but we invited bookstagrammers out. And so they're all going to be posting the arcs that we're giving them, or the finished books, and there's, I think, 20 of them coming. So it gets that sense immediately of, oh, I see that book everywhere. And there's this like boring marketing stat where you have to see something 11 times before you buy it. And if, you know, you're seeing that on 11 Instagram accounts, that counts. So.
Yeah, Instagram has changed the way so many of us have, like, buy things, books included. And I'll speak to the Grey Wolf Instagram in that it's just really useful in getting our book covers out there. And just I try to just do at least a few photos of every single book that we publish, just to get it, you know, in front of people's eyes, and especially the books that you know, they're pre-publication, so I just try to time it right before they come out so that you get maximum exposure, and then it publishes, and we're on to the next one. What was the question? Like, what does an influencer do?
Yeah, what's their role in the publicity chain?
Yeah, I mean, I think some people, like, I've worked with Her Pains. Has anyone worked with her? She runs a beautiful, beautiful account, and I feel like it's more of a conversation between the two of us. She'll request books from me, and sometimes, you know, you get to know their taste, like almost like a reviewer that you get to know. And they are kind of like a new kind of reviewer. It's like a micro review in the Instagram, you know, as much as you can write in the Instagram, like, comment field or whatever.
What's the name?
It's like at Her Pickings. Like, she picked it. Her Pickings. And she's hosted giveaways, like, that's something that a lot of people on Instagram do. She'll run a contest, like, in the comments, and we'll send the books to her, and then she'll just sort of, for her specifically, she would read the book, and then kind of for a few days write about her thoughts, like, reading the book. So almost like a combination between a review and a blog, plus the photo element. So you're hitting all these different types of, it's visual, it's personal. So I think that's why she's built a great following for herself.
I guess I would say, I mean, you know, the publicity life of a book, well, I can't speak for mainstream literary, but for, like, a small press book, I like to say that the life is about a year. So, like, I know that, like, books come out, and then you get really stressed out, and you're like, oh, my God, like, I really want this featured everywhere. But the truth is, especially for small press poetry books, sometimes it takes a long time for the word to get out. It's like a slower burn, especially if small publishers don't have enough money to send out enough arcs, or like there's not enough of a lead time for the arcs to get out there. So I would say, like, you know, there are different, like, influences can work anywhere along the chain of publicity, like from, you know, to right around pub date to like maybe 6 months in and like a review comes out and then someone features it, like just to give it like a nice little boost. I think, you know, another way to think about it is to like keep the life of the book going. And I know that like this seems simple, but I'm just going to go ahead and say it anyway. If publishers or authors post something, you should always feel free to tag your publisher, your distributor. You know, SPD has 14,000 social media followers, and we everything that authors or publishers tag us in, we always retweet just to try to amplify that one moment. So, you know, it's not just about getting that big hit, it's also about making sure that that moment lasts a longer time. And maybe even having friends retweet it, or, you know, if that works too.
We have like a Google Excel sheet where we track all of the influencers that we're reaching out to, whether it's YouTube or Instagram, and you know, whether or not they're on social media or other kind of influencer. And we list all of the books that we're connecting with them about so we can track it. And then one of the things our interns does is follows up and says, like, did they actually do anything with this? Because you come to realize very quickly the people that want the Grey Wolf book and the people that want to help talk about how much they love the Grey Wolf book. And so I think taking the time to track it in the same way you would, you know, critics and that kind of thing, to make sure that the people that you're sending things to or engaging with are actually, doing something with your book is important. And then on the note of book jackets, something I see a lot, especially in small press, is authors not advocating for their cover to be visible online. People discover books online, so you want your jacket to look great, of course, but if you can't read the title in a thumbnail, that matters. We have to think about designing books as physical objects and as digital objects, because that's how people are discovering them. There's a great article in Vulture from last month about how Instagram has changed book design.
Yeah.
And I would definitely encourage you people to read that and to advocate for that when you're getting your jacket.
Cool. So just sort of piggybacking off of that about how publishers work with influencers to have a successful relationship and to have a successful campaign, what does success look like? What are the KPIs that you track? How do you define whether that's someone you want to continue working with or not?
I think with Grey Wolf in particular, it has been a very, kind of an organic thing, like, especially with people who've reached out directly to us, because I think for me, since I managed the Instagram, I've gotten a lot of, like, the first, like, the DMs, like, I check those, so it's nice because I wasn't cold pitching anyone in that case, but I kind of tried to develop that, make that relationship last, and then,
I'm sorry, what was the question? What are the KPIs that you track?
Oh, the tracking. I have to say, we don't track that much in terms of the influencer, like we don't have the Excel sheet. Maybe I should have one. I was like,
I'll share it with you.
Well, I think what I'm tracking is like the enthusiasm. Like when you really get that passion, when you're seeing someone really dig into a book in like a, you know, thoughtful, engaging way, plus you have this, it's very just kind of like when I see that love for not only like a particular book, but then also kind of love for the Grey Wolf brand, I think that is a success. That I would mark that as the key performance check.
May I ask a quick question?
Yeah, totally, of course.
I've heard ACRs, DMs, KPIs.
Sure.
I don't know what any of them mean.
Yeah. And ARC is an advanced reader copy, which is a galley that a publisher would send out. I'm not talking to microphones, so I don't hear. A galley that a publisher would send out in advance of publication for a reviewer. KPI is a key performance indicator, which is like a piece of data that we would track to indicate whether a marketing campaign is successful or not. DMs are direct messages on Instagram, so if you want to work with Grey Wolf, you slide into Karen's DMs.
That's right. Email me. Well, like, no DMs, please.
Okay, cool. So let's
probably know, but you can see your inventory on our website. So you can see the numbers kind of slowly drop. Don't create too much anxiety for yourself, please. But that's pretty much what I track. But not only that, I tend to, because I'm a distributor, I also track the order numbers from Amazon and Ingram, which are kind of like markers for the field in general, for the demand of your book in general. And if you're an SPD author, you can actually ask your publisher to call me, and I can talk them through the numbers. They're not like publicly available, but that is an option that is available to you. I will also say that this is just something that's come up for SPD, so bear with me, but you know, we've noticed that with small publishers with really small print runs, like 200 to 500, when demand comes up, it's difficult to keep the book in stock. And I've noticed that, you know, if a moment happens, like a review or an influencer posts a photo or something like that, you know, your book will sell out immediately, and then it's kind of hard to ride that wave. So a really useful thing for authors to do is actually to track that inventory, and if the copies get low, especially if you know, like, you know, oh, there's 10 copies left at SPD, and I have an event coming up and a bookstore will probably want 20, or a review's coming out, maybe, like, that'll increase sales, like, just tell your publishers to give us a call, and we'll arrange like a quick shipment. And like just being able to keep your book in stock and being able to ride that wave while taking into consideration your publisher's cash flow is like really super valuable. You are not bothering us. I publicity manage 1,000 books that come through SPD a year, so you should always email me. Like it's easier for me actually when people get in touch and say, hey, this is happening, because I can't keep track of everything. So yeah, just a hot tip for SPD authors.
Oh, go ahead. Well, I was just going to say, in terms of like key performance indicators, I feel that even for sort of more traditional book media, it's becoming quite difficult to see, you know, the line from a great rave review and a top publication translate into sales. Like, it's become much more disparate, and it can certainly burnish, you know, the publication of a book and makes the author happy, makes the publisher happy, but ultimately the kind of translation to sales is quite nebulous in many cases. But that's just to say it's similar, it's kind of similar in influencing too. So you just feel like publishing is a very imperfect business model. It's just kind of a little bit all over the place, and we just try our best to line everything up to get the book out there, to get the book reviews, but frankly, sometimes it doesn't always translate into sales. And then vice versa, maybe a book didn't get reviewed, didn't get that much attention, but suddenly gets up for a big award, and then it's a whole different conversation.
I also think you need to decide what you're asking of that influencer. So we published Wendell Berry. There's a farm in the Midwest that have a dog named Wendell Berry, and they have a lot of followers, because Farmstagram is a thing. And so we asked if they would like to do a giveaway, because we were doing the first like Wendell Berry authorized reader of his work, if they wanted to do a giveaway with us. Because what we wanted were followers of theirs to also follow Counterpoint. So it was less about that book specifically and more about getting those followers. So, you know, the giveaway was you had to follow their account, you had to follow ours, and then we did the giveaway. And that was really, really successful for us. And then we were able to track attrition of followers over the next month, and those people stayed, because you can just count how many followers you have, and they stayed with us, which is really, really cool. And then the other thing that I've totally forgotten, whatever I was going to say. So, yeah.
Okay, so let's talk about how working with influencers is different than working with traditional media. So how is getting an influencer campaign different than like a review in Kirkus or something like that?
I think, first of all, what comes to mind is the timeline is much more flexible, which I think Tricia mentioned. The general sort of rule of publishing seems to be, you know, concentrate around pub day, and that can certainly work for a more online, digital, you know, Instagram sort of thing, but you can just sort of have, you know, like an example is Emma Watson. She has a book club called, I think, Our Shared Shelf,
and
she picked up The Argonauts, which was much, I mean, it had been out for a couple of years already, and, you know, that, but it's still, if Emma Watson picks it up, like, that's great. She doesn't have to stick to our timeline. Like, we'll give her any book that she wants to promote on her Instagram. So it's just not bound by as many of the sort of normal rules necessarily. And it just seems like a pretty nimble and, you know, for me, as you might have found the sense that I just kind of go with the flow. If anyone asks for a book, like my rule is if they're enthusiastic enough to reach out to Grey Wolf to ask for a review copy, whether they have 1,000 followers or 10,000 followers or what have you, like, I'm going to send it. And I think that's part, if you have, you know, not everyone has as many review copies to work with or galleys to work with as, you know, Grey Wolf might, but if you can send it, I think, you know, well, it's good to track also. I feel like for me, once we get to a point, you know, I do have a more books to work with, so I think that's why I'm a little bit more like, I don't want to say no to anyone and just try to cultivate it from there. But because I'm listening to what Trisha's saying, I'm like, well, don't send everything if you don't have a lot to work with, and be more intentional. Send it as a PDF. That's a good idea. Yeah, I guess it's just a more kind of amorphous and flexible.
And it's free. Like, you know, Cision or Meltwater, these cost thousands of dollars. And those are, if you don't know what those are programs that track journalists, and you can find out who's writing on what beat or who's the book's editor or whatever. But you have to pay thousands of dollars to have subscriptions. You can just go into Twitter and search a topic and find who's talking about it. You can go into Instagram. We had a book on postpartum depression, and we just looked at all of the accounts who had over a certain follower threshold who were, you know, aimed at, you know, postpartum issues for women, and then we direct message DM'd all of them and said, do you want a copy of this book? And in our DMs we would always include the cover of the book in addition to, like, a, you know, an image of the book and the message, and then all those people got the book. We ended up sending about 20 of them, and then they all posted about it at the same time. So, you know, immediately you're able to break your book into these niche communities using free, absolutely free tools. I mean, it does cost money to send the books and pay for postage and that kind of thing, but yeah, it's cheap.
Yeah, I mean, I really just want to echo what Jen is saying in the sense of, like, I know that, you know, we're all really part of a close-knit literary community, but it really is worth looking outside of that community, especially if your book deals with other topics like art or film or music or flowers or cooking or, you know, there's, like, lots of ways. You know, if Alice James did a campaign a while ago where they, like, reached out to, like, vintage perfume enthusiasts to promote, like, a collection of Victorian women authors, and that was super successful. So, you know, just, like, looking outside of us on the free big wide web is a good way to go. And, yeah, I mean, I would say the thing about influences is that, like, I feel like the wave is shorter than with a review. Like, or at least from my experience with SPD, we had an Emma Watson experience, which was actually very interesting for us because doesn't happen very much for, like, super small presses, but we had this book called Fierce Films and Notorious Liars that got picked up by Emma Watson's book club and then by Teen Vogue. And it was crazy because they have a print run of 500, and then all of a sudden people wanted, like, thousands and thousands of them. And then they were like, we can't afford to print that many books. How many do we print? How many are going to come back in returns? You know, this is the kind of thing that, like, I think small press authors have to be a little bit cautious of when it comes to writing, like, a big influencer wave, which is that, like, when your cash flow is really tight, like, you know, I would really recommend talking to your distributor, talking to your publisher about what you can afford. And, you know, we've had some big sales where people have overordered and then ended up losing money on a big wave. I mean, this is, like, more of a tip for publishers, but it's also just kind of, like, I don't know, the dark side of influencer sales or something, you know? Yeah.
Reese Witherspoon picked a Counterpoint book in August, and they gave us 2 months notice for a hardcover. And they were very clear that in no way were we to go out of stock on Amazon, because Reese is a partner with them for audiobooks. And that was terrifying because in order to make sure that we didn't go out of stock at Amazon, we had to print a lot of books and we had to print them quickly and we had to, it was an investment and a real financial risk in order to do that, but you can't say no. To Reese Witherspoon. So I would always encourage publishers to reach out to other publishers who've had their books because I don't hide my sales data. It helps all of us to know how many copies of a book Emma Watson sold for us or Reese Witherspoon sold for us and what our returns are looking like. And because with small presses, independent presses do not have the marketing engine that the big five do. So even though we got a Reese pick, you look at our book scan, that book sold amazing for us, but it did not sell anywhere near the big five book scan because we don't have an engine to turn on to suddenly make that book in every Target and Costco in the world. So ask your fellow publishers. When the University of Texas was about to publish Hanif Akhrabi's latest book, their publisher called me and said, what orders do I hold and what orders do I ship? And that is information that you should be asking for, and we're so happy to share it because it really, it's a tough financial decision to make, and I get it.
How'd that turn out for you?
The Reese Witherspoon?
Yeah.
We've sold 21,000 copies of the e-book and 15,000 copies of print, so it went well. But, the big five sell like 40,000 copies so from her pick, so we can't meet demand like that.
So how does the e-book do for you? When they say you can't run out on Amazon, I assume you mean that they can't run out of the hardcover book.
Yeah.
But you've got the e-book available. How does the e-book do for you compared with the hardcover book?
Well, we sold more ebooks for sure. I mean, I think that's particular to her kind of book club. I mean, we sold the rights to the audiobook. The audiobook has sold so many more copies even than E or P. But we sold more. I just think that her particular readership likes to have the digital format. And they can read fast. They're fast readers.
I just want to echo Jen in saying that Instagram and Twitter can really function as an amazing database. Like, I actually prefer using Twitter to Cision. I don't like Cision. It's very finicky, and a lot of their information is out of date, in case you're considering a subscription. Yeah. Just hop on Twitter.
Yeah, I agree. Honestly, these people are living their lives online, pretty much, so all of the data to connect with them and, you know, what they're reading and what they're interested in is there for you to access. So I wouldn't bother spending thousands of money. Let's pivot a little bit and talk about how writers can work with influencers and how that reaching out to them as a writer is different than reaching out as a publisher.
I think that that's kind of like it's not a difficult question, but it's like a kind of subjective one, maybe. I think that like there are some authors that feel really empowered to reach out, and there are some authors that don't feel comfortable doing that. I always encourage authors to work with their publishers when they don't feel comfortable reaching out and seeing if the publisher is willing to do that on their behalf. But if you're an author who wants to reach out to an influencer, my general feeling is if you don't ask, you don't get. So, you know, I know that there are people who probably get like hundreds of DMs a day, but I think that if you're respectful and, you know, you really take into account what their tastes and interests are and you write a thoughtful message, like, you know, the worst thing that happens is that this person doesn't reply to you, right? Especially on social media. So I think that the more you're willing to put yourself out there, like, I know it's a risk and, you know, writing is really vulnerable and you always feel really weird about it, but it can pay off if you feel like exposing yourself a little bit more in that sense. But you should never feel afraid to ask your publisher to help you with some of that work, especially if you help them do the work, right? If you're like, here's a list of the people that I'd like to reach out to with all of their information, can you do this for me? I feel like publishers then feel like they have the capacity to be able to do that for you, right? if like you create that working relationship where you do a little bit and then they do a little bit, I think that that can be a really mutually supportive relationship.
Yeah, I totally agree with that. And I would say for speaking, you know, when I'm a publicist for a book and the author is asking me if I can send to X, Y, and Z person, I'm always happy to send. And again, that's just within the bounds of my company where I do have more books to work with to send out. But especially when the author's like, oh, well, I know it's so-and-so, or like, you know, this person is like my cousin from, you know, way back when, and they, whatever, they're like a soap, you know, influencer. I don't know why I came up with that, but it's whatever, you know, it's all about, I feel, you know, when you sign with Grey Wolf and many other publishers, you get, like, you know, author questionnaire where we ask you, well, who do you know? And I think the same thing applies for if it's someone on Twitter that you know or Instagram who really needs a copy. If you know Tegan and Sarah because, you know, your mom was their high school teacher, send them all a copy. You know, just let the publisher know, especially if they have, like, a, you know, they have a well-staffed marketing publicity department. We are always happy to do that on your behalf. It doesn't have to fall to the author.
And don't feel like you have to be on all the platforms. Like, if you feel most comfortable on Instagram, then only have an Instagram account. Or if you know that you're a really good, you know, live reader, then get on YouTube and show us your stuff, you know, and then if you're on that platform, engage with other people whose work you admire on that platform so that it's a two-way street, you know, you're interacting, again, reflect the literary citizenship, be a good literary citizen. If you've read a book that you loved and you're on Instagram, take a picture of it and tell people why you loved it. It goes back and forth.
Okay.
Do
you
want to
do a question?
If you're going with a small press, do you need an agent, or is it better not to have an agent?
I'll go ahead and say that, like, for SPU publishers, I mean, we do a lot of poetry, and the publishers we work with are super small, so most of them work with authors that are unagented, and I know a lot of authors who prefer actually to work that way, but I also know that, like, a lot of the bigger indies prefer to take agented submissions, so, yeah, I mean, it really depends. Yeah.
Case by case, for Grey Wolf, we usually are working with agents.
Yeah, we're usually working with agents as well. And I would say for a writer, if you are choosing not to or you don't have the opportunity to have an agent, please do find someone who has legal expertise who can read your contract for you and help you advocate for yourself, because I have a lot of problems with agents, but what they can do or what they should be doing is making sure that your contract includes fair negotiated rights around print and E and royalties and audio and bonuses and all those things. And if you don't know about those things and you don't have an agent, seek out people who do. They can help you.
Yeah, and on that note, for small press authors, if your publisher's not offering you a contract, you should ask for one, even if it's boilerplate, or at least make sure the terms are really, really clear. I mean, I know with, like, the micropress stuff, like, sometimes people don't offer you one. It's always a good idea to have one. Even if you have to kind of, like, look it up online or draw it up yourself. Organizations like CLMP can really help you, actually, because or publishers, I used to send out, when I was at CLMP, a lot of, like, boilerplate contracts for agreements with authors. So, you know, I just think that it's better to have one than get into a dispute, which happens sometimes, so. I guess we're going to questions.
Yeah,
I'm really excited.
Could you say something about the difference between how the Big Five would handle all this and how you handle publicity?
Yeah, it's a real shame Rachel's in here.
Yeah.
So I'm sorry to fend for her. Yeah, I mean, they have departments. They have entire departments. Riverhead has a team whose job is just to reach out to influencers. And they have boatloads of money, right? So they are throwing lavish parties. Knopf YA had a film version of one of their novels, and they invited 200 bookstagrammers to the red carpet, like, paper that had come out. So it's a true matter of scale, I think.
Cool.
Yeah, I would agree with that. We at Greywolf, there's no budget being spent on this. It's really just me and my phone. And that's what we can work with. I mean, I think it's working well enough for us, but it's just a matter of capacity and budget that I think would differ from a much bigger house.
Not to super wrap small press, I think everything that you've said is true, but I also think that, like, for particular kinds of literature, sometimes a large publicity department doesn't work in your favor. Like, I know someone who was, you know, like, a trans author who worked with a unnamed larger publishing house who then insisted that, you know, they get a blurb from the person who wrote The Danish Girl, which, if you don't know, like, that's a figure that, like, people consider that book to be very detrimental to the trans community, and so then it was really hard for them to market the book, because it's like, oh, we have this author who blurbed this book that's a big name that my publishing house wanted, but in my small community of people who are actually going to buy this book, they're going to see that and be like, I'm absolutely not buying this book, right? So I think that, you know, part of, like, having Karen on her phone or Jen on her phone is that, like, we as publicity people at small press places really do love your work. We read it, we want to do the best by it that we can. You know, we want to do the best for it on its own terms and not by, like, any other big house terms or, like, numbers terms. Every book is different, and, like, every author is different and needs a different strategy, and I think that, you know, we have a little bit more flexibility to be able to do that, even if it, you know, takes a little bit more of a creative thinking. So good job, everyone. Yes. Doing a really good job.
Well, just to sort of pivot off that, let's talk a little bit about the downside of influencer marketing and how things can, because these communities do tend to be very tight-knit. The Bookstagram, Bookternet kind of people, they all know each other. It's a very, you know, sort of insular community, and if they turn on something, they turn quick. Mm-hmm. So let's, you know, if anyone's got any sort of, like, things maybe not to do.
Well, this is not so much what not to do, but recently there was this article, I think it was in The Cut, that was, I can't remember the woman's name, but she was talking about how she went out to write a book to make, like, millions of dollars, and she talked about how she was able to send her galleys out with bottles of Moët, and how then, of course, she had such a successful campaign, and, like, all this money came in because she got this, and this blog, because she sends champagne, and that is really, I think, an extreme case where that's not the way most of us are going to be able to market our books. We just don't have the budget for that. So I think it's worth to you know, taking a look at the privileges of a lot of these sort of influencer spaces and making an effort to really, you know, do your research and reach the people who are going to really love your book and, you know, word of mouth it, other, you know, beyond a pretty picture, I guess. Yeah.
Books cost money, so to even participate in Bookstagram, people who use Instagram to talk about books, a lot of, you know, people are buying books and doing this, and so something we have to think about is that the economics and who gets to participate in these things and who doesn't. And libraries are great. We see a lot of our books showing up on Instagram. It's clear, like, the cellophane's been taken off, or, you know, so there. I love that people can go to libraries and participate in the Bookstagram ecosystem, but it is a very, it's privileged because of the swag that people are giving out. It's privileged because books cost money, and I like all of the people that are sort of disrupting the space. Well-read black girl. If you don't follow that account, please do. She's really glorious, really transformed, and encouraged a whole generation of people of color to come onto Instagram and talk about books, and I want to see more of that. We need more of that.
There's certainly been a big change in the type of people that we see talking about books due to people like Well-Read Black Girl, who I would consider an influencer, or someone like Lisa Lucas at the National Book Foundation, I would also consider her an influencer, who are encouraging people of color. And now we see, you know, someone like Elizabeth Acevedo's book, who went, like, who's been doing so well and is so popular, and it's in part because these people have been talking about it and advocating for it. Yeah, so let's take any questions. Let's go.
Okay, as an author, I hear a lot of this about agents and needing agents or not needing agents, and press that will take agents only, agent submissions. But what I really want to know is, any agent better than no agent? I mean, every single agent has like the keys to the kingdom to get to the publisher, and no matter how they are, I mean, there's a million agents, so there has to be good agents and not so good agents.
That's
and,
true.
And how do you, so the answer might be no, that any agent is not as good as sometimes no agent?
I mean, I would say that an agent that believes in your work is the best thing, and it would be better to have no agent than an agent that like didn't care about you or
but
you were only like
you?
I mean, yeah,
they might not even think they don't believe in you. I think that's not
right.
An issue per se, but there's just different tiers of agents. Sorry.
I can't speak for you all. I'm not an editor in any capacity. I think that might be outside of the scope of things that we can speak to confidently. But yeah,
I like what you said.
Okay, let's go.
Thank you.
Sure.
Oh.
I've been in a lot of panels with the agents. I don't know who just asked that question. And they've all said that you have to feel good about the person that is going to represent you. And if you don't feel comfortable with them, even if they believe in you, but for some reason you just don't jive with them, it's better to have no agent. And so they're saying, slow down. You know, don't just jump at the first person that comes to you. Sorry to take over, but that's what they've all said.
Is your strategy different with Goodreads influencers, reviewers?
Yeah, thanks for bringing up Goodreads. That was the thing I forgot to say. So when we were talking about tracking, if we know that something's coming up, an influencer post, a giveaway, Reese Witherspoon, etc., I tell authors, never look at your Amazon ranking, and I mean it, don't look at it. It means nothing. It's don't look at it, except for when you know that something is about to come out, because you can judge things by Goodreads, add to reads, which you can just look at any book's stats of how many people have added it to read or added it to a shelf. It's in the upper right-hand corner on your book's page. And Amazon ranking. So, look at before and after something hits, drops, posts, etc., and you can see the spike, and we track that over a couple days. Goodreads influencers, we do keep a database that we update twice a year on the top 100 reviewers, not the most popular, because those are just about like likes and things, but the people who are getting the most interactions with their reviews, not just the people who review the most books, because you don't want those to hurt those people. But so we definitely, we reach out to them, but it's very hard to reach them. They're intentionally sort of private about their contact info. They are overloaded. They are a lot more genre-focused. So if you are writing sci-fi, romance, horror, Goodreads is your place. Your people are there. And so finding the people, and you can just read. Goodreads organizes their reviews by most influential. So, if Roxane Gay, for example, is someone who always posts her blurbs as reviews, so those are often like the first thing you'll see on a Goodreads page. This is another thing I would encourage writers to do. If you get a blurb from someone who is on Goodreads as a writer, ask that blurber to also post it as a review on their page, because you get a double whammy out of that blurb. So they're harder to reach, but they are influential, and we definitely see concrete sales spikes from when a top 100 Goodreads person reviews one of our books on Goodreads.
Can you speak to Twitter? It just seems like it's like a public, text really fast, and I've done it for a while, but like, what is the most effective way to use Twitter? Like in Instagram, at least you can go back and see everybody and look, kind of see their history really quick visually, but what's the most effective use of Twitter?
I do think it's
pretty case by case in terms of what do you want out of it. Like, do you want to cultivate your own following? Do you want to use it as a research tool? I mean, as a publicist, I use Twitter as a research tool for every single book that I work on, just as like to find out who's reviewing what, who's at which publication now, who's changed their jobs. I just look on Twitter. And if you're, let's say, promoting your book, there's, you know, I would say probably maybe like 6 months or so before, you know, try to get on there, engage, be a good literary citizen online, you know, talk to writers that you admire, talk to reviewers that you admire, if that's what you're comfortable with, if that's what you want out of your Twitter. And the other side would just be, you can just use it as a resource to learn more about the literary landscape and who's reviewing right now and who are your favorite publishers. It's just a wealth of information that's available, but I don't think there's a right or a wrong way. I mean, just don't harass anyone. That's the right way. That's the best way.
I will say also, I'm a social media manager, but I also am on the influencer side. I also, you know, post about books that I love and connect with writers that I love. I use Twitter a lot for networking and also to suss out whether, like, you're a person that I like and I'm interested in, because if you are interested in the same things that I'm interested in, I'm more likely to read your book, and also if I know you're not, like, a trash human being, I'm more interested in reading your book. Like, I want to know that you're a good person, that you're fun, and that you're engaging with your community and with your other writers and your people means a lot to people who are going to potentially read your book.
Just really briefly on that point too, if you don't want to use Twitter or whatever social media platform, I think Jen was talking about not needing to be on every platform, I think usually your publisher can help fill in the blanks with their social media. So, hopefully that takes some of the pressure off. There's other people doing that work for you.
Go ahead.
Thank you. As a small publisher, I worked on this anthology for 6 years, and I got really busy as a labor activist and mom and fell off the promotion wagon. Thank you, SPD, for being so awesome. But it's this huge project. You know, it's like this gigantic transgenre anthology with 150 people in it. So my question is it's 3 years old. And I want to promote it. Have I missed the wave? Or do you have any suggestions for whether or not in the age of instantism, people can catch a wave again?
Well, I mean, we were talking about the book that Emma Watson picked up. The good thing about books is it's not like fashion where things go out of season and then you can never see them again. Books are around forever, so I would say that, you know, to a certain extent, there maybe is no wave.
Well, it's a book on interventionist social art in an age of Trumpism. So basically looking at what is relevant. But yeah. I get the messaging, but I'm wondering what the mechanisms are. Where? How?
Yeah, I would. Or Books published this book called Women of Resistance. And I would look at that book as a comp for you. It's an anthology. And look at the people who talked about it online. There was a lot of chatter about that book on Twitter and Instagram. And I would say, you know, if you resonated with this book, you might also resonate with this. I think that's like a good
idea. Yeah, and I mean, you should, if you're an SPD publisher, you should send me an email. and we can talk about some things that we can do to boost the book. I think especially for anthologies, the lifeline is pretty long. I mean, like you're saying, it's like an issue that stays relevant to this day. And like, you know, especially with so many authors on deck who might be able to help you, we can just give me a call and we can talk about a strategy. I mean, that's the thing about SPD. I really can't say it enough. Like, 500 publishers, 1,000 books come through me every year. Just like email me, set up a phone appointment. We'll like, you know, form a strategy for you. I can't promise you that I'll do all the work or like make lists for you, but I can definitely like talk you through what you can do, you know?
With anthologies, also just a note, something we do is that we in-house, and you can ask your publisher to do this if you're doing an anthology, make social media assets for every writer who's in it. So a profile pic, a banner, if you're using Twitter or Facebook, these are different images that appear on those platforms. And we have all the writers who want to participate, turn on their assets for their pages at the same time. So if people don't want to craft their own tweet, we give them, like, here's a tweet you can tweet. Just copy and paste and put it in. And if you can take all of the anthology writers and have them do the same thing at the same time, you're amplifying it. It's such a...
Back to being genuine on Twitter, which is an oxymoron. That's how I feel. So how does one engage in the community in a genuine way? That's an honest question if I'm baffled by the medium.
I'll say, if you're baffled by the medium, maybe you want to check out Instagram. Like, it's not every platform is going to be for everyone. And, you know, you could just be on Twitter literally, like, just as to see what other people are tweeting. If you don't want to engage, and it's, like, difficult for you to engage with right now, I would say, and you really want to do some other form of social media, maybe just try another platform and see if that's more natural to you. I don't think it's necessary to force yourself to engage in something that isn't fun for you. Like, it should be fun. And that's okay. You know, it's okay. It's not crucial. And as I mentioned before, you know, you're like, for Grey Wolf, like, we have a Twitter, we have a big following, like, we have an Instagram, we have a Facebook, and we amplify, we boost what our authors are posting about, about the events they're doing, the reviews they're getting. So we're doing that work for them. There's nothing in our, in our company where we say all authors must be on Twitter, all authors must be on Instagram. It's absolutely not. It's what they're comfortable with. If they're having fun, and we have some amazing authors who are amazing on social media, and that's great, like, hurrah, but it's not, like, a bad thing to not be on Twitter. They need to write their books, you know?
Yeah, and I would say, like, I mean, I know this is a panel about influencers and, like, like, social media is really big right now, but, like, everybody only has a limited amount of time and energy, and if you feel like your time and energy is not best spent on social media, there are other ways that you can help your publisher or your distributor. Like, maybe you could make a list of all the people that you've engaged with over the past couple of years who you would like to read your book, and, like, make a list of their emails, and then, like, make a little newsletter that feels, like, more genuine to you. Or, like, you know, I think that because this is kind of, like, the main promotional tool, we sometimes forget about other stuff we could do, like reaching out to academics who might want to teach your book, or, like, making sure that, like, your book data is into your distributor on time so that they have the lead time to get the information to the people who need it. There's, like, lots of parts of the process that you as an author can help your publisher or distributor out with, and, you know, just ask them, say, hey, I don't want to do Twitter, but I really want to work hard on this book to make sure it reaches people. Like, what can I do, you know?
We have an intern right now who is a young person of color who does not want to be on social media, and they have just made a choice about their time and energy. So I knew all about this person, and they had no online platform, but I saw them at events, and I saw them engaging, not just with me, but with other members of the small press community in this town in a way that felt authentic and genuine and curious and excited. And I had to wait almost a year to have an internship opening that I could offer them, but I'm so excited to work. And her not being on social media has no bearing on her ability to be immensely passionate about the work she's doing and very good at her job.
Sorry, can I ask you? You asked how can writers work with influencers, mm-hmm. and I feel like you kind of started answering it, but I was wondering if you could talk to this point as an influencer yourself.
I don't ever call myself an influencer. I certainly, I do, write reviews and things like that. I think what's most important to me, if an author is going to approach me, that it doesn't feel pushy, that it feels really genuine. It's like, I looked at your profile, I noticed that you're reading things that are similar to mine, I think you'd like my book, and then sort of wait for them to respond. The worst thing that you could do is, like, keep trying to push them and keep, like, being really pushy about it, because it is so instant. The first thing that someone's going to do is be like, this person's annoying me. I've got other people in my DMs to deal with. I've got, other books that I want to, spend energy on.
So I would just be as, you know, as genuine as possible. You know, we've been throwing that word around a lot, but really, like, the only thing that you want to get across is, I think you'd like my book. Please check it out. Please, if you like it, tweet about it, share a picture, and get the word out. That's all, you know, pretty much we're asking of influencers these days. So that would be how I would respond. You know, that would be the kind of interaction that I would respond best to. But again, I do, you know, if someone approaches me, sends me an email or a DM or whatever, I will check out their social media profile, check out who else is talking about them. I might go to their publisher's page and look at reviews or whatever and see sort of what you're about. So having all those things in place and having like a little bit of a presence just so I can see that you're legit is also important for me.
Thank you. I have a question about pre-order sales. For a small press, what would they consider a good pre-order number?
This is a hard question for me because we don't do pre-orders. We do back orders to bookstores and event spaces and major retailers, but with SPD, it's like once the book is available in the warehouse, we will sell them. Some presses consider this pre-orders. Most of the presses that I work with, I recommend that they actually hold the books to SPD and then do direct sales from their website as pre-orders, because then they get, you know, 100% of the profit rather than the cut that they take from us, and then regular sales go through SPD. Because what this means is that we can still sell to bookstores and retailers, but then you're making more money on the actual pre-order portion of it. I mean, for a small press, poetry pre-orders, I would say like 50 is a great number, honestly, for the presses that I work with, but that's a very small number compared to some other publishers.
Feel really strongly about pre-orders because Amazon takes a lot of that business, and pre-order campaigns are really important for indies too. So please, please remember that independent bookstores can do pre-order campaigns for your books. If they get them through SPD Ingram, they can do a pre-order campaign for you. We did a pre-order campaign for Nicole Chung's debut memoir with Powell's because she's from Oregon. And, you know, Nicole has a very strong platform online, and we had about 250 signed pre-orders for that memoir with Powell's. And then, of course, people were pre-ordering it at Amazon, too. And we were talking about what to say at this panel, and I don't want it to go unsaid that when you see books on Instagram or on YouTube or whatever, most of those sales then go to Amazon because people are on their phone and they never have to leave their phone. They can buy the book that they just saw on their phone. And all of us as literary citizens need to be conscious of the ways in which if you are excited about a book that you're hearing about from influencers, you should be thinking about where you buy that book. But also one of the things we try to do in our interactions as publishers with influencers is educate them. So if you're going to link to Amazon, I get it. They have an affiliate program. Influencers are making money. But also please link to either your website or SPD's website or the author's local bookstore. Like, part of what we have to do with these influencers is educate them, because otherwise all of this business is going to Amazon.
I will say just on the like side note of educating influencers and working with influencers as a writer, the more information that you can give them so that they don't have to go and try and hunt for a link or hunt for information about you is the best thing. So if you're gonna, you know, send an email, attach a copy, a PDF of the cover, attach, you know, links to reviews or links to where people can buy the book so that they can just like take that information and plug it into their Instagram or into their YouTube or whatever the situation is. We might be, it's 2:30, so we might be a little bit over time. So let's wrap it up. We'll wrap up here, and if you have questions, just come find us.
So if you have a limited number of ARCs, can you ever send a digital copy with a PDF?
usually when an author or a publisher has contacted me about a book, they'll offer a hardback or a PDF. I know a lot of people now prefer to have PDFs because they, you know, read it on their Kindle or on their phone or whatever the situation is. So I would offer both.
I was wondering if you could speak a little bit more about the, I guess, use and value of YouTube as influence. Heard a lot about Twitter and Instagram. Is there a little bit of YouTube?
Booktube. I mean, I wonder if, how you feel about this, just because, like, poetry is, you know, such an has such an explosive. Performance poets are all over YouTube.
They are. However, I haven't worked that much with the actual reviewers on YouTube. I do get some requests, and I'm happy to send and follow up with books, but that's an area that we haven't really ever, I haven't really explored too intentionally. It's more that it comes in. I do think that for my understanding, which is limited, it's very, maybe more geared towards YA and like a lot, like by a large percentage.
Yeah. And yes.
And what?
I would say, same as Karen, I don't have a super amount of experience with it. I do know that the presses that I work with who do a lot of performance poetry and spoken word, like you said, tend to use it as a promotional tool, like a lot of readings and recordings and stuff, and, you know, we put that on the website and try to blast it out however we can. Also, weirdly, like, experimental poets really love making, like, really weird book trailers, like really awesome, like, you know, they often have friends who are filmmakers or, like, you know, friends who kind of want to do some kind of experimental short video, and I think that those actually do play really well, especially if they're works of art in their own right, because then they can reach other communities. Like, I know someone who had a book that came out, and their musician friend, like, did a song where they featured the book. Like, I also know someone who's an experimental poet whose book was in a Death Grips music video. That book sold really well. So, you know, I think that, like, stuff off the beating track on YouTube is more what I'm familiar with. But it does work, yeah.
It does pay you to be creative and to have that kind of network and maybe think a little bit outside the box with what your campaign is going to be. Yeah.
I don't know if there's a way to answer this, but say you get a book published with a press the size of, like, a small press, and you do fine, you do good, but not, like, right in the middle. How much money would you make as an author?
I can speak towards this as a small press author. My first book did really well by small press standards, and I made $0. It's really common for people in the small press world, especially the small presses that SPD works with, to lose money on their books. I mean, this is like a reality, unfortunately, especially with, you know, poetry presses. That's why so many of them that are successful, like Nightboat or Future Poem or Ugly Duckling Press, a lot of the higher profile poetry presses are nonprofits because they truly cannot cover the costs of printing books and selling them. So I think that, you know, if you're an experimental poetry or if you're someone who wants to work with, you know, a press of that size, that unfortunately is a reality. It's a reality that all of us really want to change. So, like, it's also dependent on stuff like arts funding. It's depending on, you know, the situation with the press in particular. I work with a lot of presses that just are people with day jobs who then pay for it themselves, which is, you know, it is what it is. But I do think that, you know, people should try to get paid for their work because it is a lot of work. And if that's what you want, you should seek a larger publisher, unfortunately, is the answer to that question.
Yes.
Yeah.
Oh, good. So the relationship between the big publisher and the small presses is often spoken of as contentious or sort of a, not necessarily like there's a good bridge going on between those two. So other than boosting the work of small press authors and boosting those books, you know, in the obvious way, is there anyone who's trying to bridge that world proactively and is doing it well to look at? As a model?
Do you mean a publisher or an influencer?
Anyone. Someone who cares about that in the literary world.
I,
I think all of us care.
Yeah,
about
yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, I don't
mean on your end. I mean on
Oh, I don't want this room to leave thinking that the big five aren't trying to do that either. Again, I keep speaking to this woman who's not here, but Rachel Fertilizer was supposed to be in my spot. She was the events director at Housing Works Bookstore in New York, a nonprofit bookstore, and made her way and is in corporate Big Five publishing. But Rachel does not care where your book was published if she loves it, and if she loves it, she's going to talk about it. And I think there are a lot of good literary citizens working in big five houses who are, you know, Lisa Lucas is another, her name's
yeah.
already come up, but Lisa also doesn't care, even though so many of the books that end up winning those awards are just naturally published by the big five. Lisa is equally a champion. So there's always some envy, and they certainly set the terms of the industry because they're the big players in it, and we sort of have to, you know, live in that ecosystem as small presses, but there's plenty of people in Big Five publishing who are really great literary citizens.
Yeah, or people, yeah, Kate Freeman, who left Big Five Publishing to do like a management course in nonprofits and has always been like a huge supporter of like literary nonprofit publishing. There's plenty of people who kind of like find the time or like use their influence to be able to try to build those bridges. Agents included, Monica Woods is like a big champion of small press authors and transitioning them into larger presses. So like, you know, stuff's happening. Not everyone does it, but you know.
Yeah, I would say a lot of authors get their start in a literary magazine or with a small press or something like that and then move on, and they never forget the person who gave them their first shot. And so that relationship becomes very important because it does sort of lead to bigger and better things, and it should be looked at as not contentious, but as part of the journey of a book.
I would just also say that it's not siloed. Like, everything flows. We all try to read as many books as possible, and people who have worked in a small press may go on to be the publicity director at a big five press. Like, there's a lot of flow between, and it's a small community at the end of the day. So we're all sort of trying to pay attention to each other and help each other.
Totally, and when our writers leave us because they got lots of money for their second book or their third book at a big five house, it stinks because I like working with them, but I'm also like, good for you, put food on your table, you know? So I understand why they make those decisions.
And just sort of like in the influencer space, the people who get into this get into it because they love books, not because they want to work for HarperCollins or, you know, whatever. They love to read. They do genuinely read these books and talk about them and advocate for them if it's something that they really enjoy. So at that level, it doesn't really matter where you're published because people will love your book and share it no matter what.
Mm-hmm. That's good. You mentioned from the literary journal, a lot of people get their start there, and I'm wondering if you have different comments for a literary journal, a nonprofit literary journal, than you do for books. I mean, I'm listening to, that's what I'm associated with. So I'm listening to that and thinking of the things that we can do that are sort of similar, but I didn't know if you had any specific comments or specific kind of recommendations for a small literary, nonprofit literary journal.
Yeah, definitely. CLMP is a really good resource for working with literary journals. I don't know if you remember any or not, but, you know, subscriptions are great. I think working with educators, like making sure that creative writing instructors have, like, a module in their course about the importance of literary journals is always, like, a great way to get adoptions. I would say make use of, like, your large list of contributors and also stay in touch with your past contributors to see if they can help you do more social media and publicity. That's a great way to go. Any other tips, Christina?
No, yeah, I think getting in touch with the people who are included in your journal is the big thing, and other organizations, influence educators, as well as, you know, booksellers at indie bookstores love lit mags, and that's certainly a big
sort of untapped influencer presence, I think. Because you enhance all these things,
Yeah, and I guess, like, this is more on the influencer end, but it's always nice to get a submission or to solicit submissions from authors who have more of a presence or who have more of a following. That tends to sell the journal a little bit better, but you probably already know that.
So, you know, there's a lot on Instagram and Twitter, and I only heard Facebook mentioned once in passing. Is Facebook just kind of
I'm going to go ahead and say I have a high school intern. She's great. I love her. She's really sassy. But I was like, hey, can you queue up some things for Facebook? And she turned around and looked at me, and she went, I guess I can ask my mom to teach me how. I don't think that Facebook is over, but I think that I think that for events, people still really use Facebook, but it seems to me that, like, that's mostly what it's used for anymore. I think that there are still many communities that exist on Facebook, so it really depends on which community that you're talking about. We are re-optimizing for Instagram, though, at SPD, so, you know.
I will say also, speaking as, like, a social media person, the audience that are on each platform are very different, and the type of content that works on each platform is very different. So the trick is not to do the same thing across all three or four, but to tailor it to the audience and the people who you're engaging with. Engagement is kind of the name of the game here. So if you have content that you think is going to work there versus, you know, less visual content that might work better on Instagram, you know, that's the place for you to be.
Totally. Yeah, just to add to that, sorry if you had to, like, hog the mic to project. It's definitely a demographic thing, and to be really thoughtful about it. So we have this, you know, true crime book that I know is sort of going to hit mostly with readers over a certain age, and so we are putting a lot of Facebook, you know, push there. Whereas, you know, if we have, like, a poetry collection by Maggie Nelson, we're going to put that thing all over Instagram, you know, so it's just, it's case by case.
I wanted to speak to Twitter really quickly, because when I started out on Twitter, I hated it, and it was because I was interacting with it incorrectly and following the wrong people. There's actually a hashtag writing community on Twitter that is some of the warmest people I've ever met, and they are on there to support you and help promote your books with you, and they ask fun questions every day. So I go on for 10 minutes a day. I've increased in the last 4 weeks my following, but they're really targeted, like, good followers, 1,500, just with 10 minutes a day. And then I wanted to say Facebook, sorry, trying to be a good literary citizen.
Facebook is really good for community, so while it may not sell your book, it's a great way to connect with other writers who are also going to support
you. Joining
groups
is a big
thing. Can you say the name of that lovely place that you mentioned?
Hashtag writing community. And if you go in there and start looking at what the writing community is hashtagging, so you'll see, like, WIP, work in progress, VSS365. So they'll post, you know, little, I don't even know what the character count is on Twitter anymore, but 240 characters from their 280 inches from their work in progress.
Okay, so we're out of time, so we're going to wrap it up, but do come talk to us and find us. Thank you.